Ladies and gentlemen, you all know my next guest. To say the phrase living legend, to use a phrase like towering rock and roll god, applies to a small handful of people in this world. But certainly this next man is one of those people. Let us now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show the one, the only, the legendary Peter Criss. Hi, Peter.
Hi, that's a hell of a bring on. I don't know if I could top that. That's pretty good.
No pressure. No pressure. Don't worry about it. No, I have to say, and if you will allow me just a small moment of what they call fanboy geeking, I got to tell you, to talk to you, Peter Criss, really is the fulfillment of a lot of dreams. And as you know, you made a very strong imprint on a whole lot of people. I mean, generation after generation after generation. I mean, fathers handing down to sons and sons handing down to grandchildren. And do you hear that every day? You must, when people say to you, look, it's, you know, you're the reason, you're the guy that got me going, you're the guy who was my inspiration. When you make music now, do you make it just for yourself, are you doing your own thing right now? Do you feel the weight of being the kind of a living legend?
Well, I hate that word. It scares me. I try not to think about all that stuff. You know, it's like when I was younger guy and all that. That was like, you know, a lot of it does get to be heavy, and it could be very ego. Your ego could really get inflated, and your brains could blow up. So today, this Peter Criss, I'm not delusional. I really try to keep my feet on the ground, and I never do music only but for the people that hear it. It's not for myself. I'm not that selfish. There is a selfishness in it that when I write and compose, yes, it's pretty much, you know, about my situations that I come and go through in life and things, loss or gain or something or other. They're usually little mini stories, I call them, about my life, but always with the people who put me in this situation today, never leave my mind. I mean, I am so grateful to God, since I am a Catholic kid and I was raised pretty cool. And my fans, when they come up to me and say, especially kids, young kids come up and say, man, I'm playing the drums because of you, it flips me out. It still flips me out.
Your new record is called One for All. That is the new Peter Criss record. And I know, now is it Paul Schaefer? Is it this record that Paul Schaefer is actually working? And you produced it too, right? You were actually in the chair. You were the man at the head of the helm.
Yeah, I felt, only because this has been in the works for 2 years because of the touring on and off, and it was the last tour, and I wanted to get to it. And Michael McLaughlin, first of all, wrote most of the stuff with me. Me and this guitarist go back to 91, and he's now in China. He lives, believe it or not, and he comes back and forth and stays in my guest house. So he had a lot to do with that. And when we started doing this and we saw the form it was going to take, and especially the songs I chose and where I wanted to really go on uncharted land, I worked with the great Ezrin and the great Ponzi and the Kramers, and I figured if I could do this, if they, you know, I learned a lot from those guys, and I had so much help with the engineers, and again, let's bring up Paul. Paul Schaefer and I go way back to the Saturday Night Live days. I had a very close friend of mine, John Belushi. We were good buddies, and it was a great crowd then, and so we knew each other. And then when this came up, easily came to my mind, if I'm going to do something by Santos, Stephen Santos, or redo a song for my mom, like What a Difference a Day Makes, or I need a guy who can play a Hammond organ and a piano. And I immediately thought of Paul, and so Mike and I went up to Paul's office at the Ed Sullivan Theater and said, what do you think it is? And he said, this is some serious stuff, man. You really got big ones to try this. You know, not everybody's going to get it, but, man, I get it, and I would be proud. And I said, well, while we're at it, can I get Will Lee, who has got to be one of the best bass players on the planet? And Will and I are like infectious friends. We can't get on the phone enough with each other. And with that, I needed an arranger, and he got me Clifford Carter, who's done a lot for Neil Diamond and Sting and stuff. And I've always wanted to do a duet with a gal, preferably Aretha Franklin, but she wasn't available. So I got this terrific gal named Jen Johnson. And the joy of it all was sitting there and working with kids. I got to work with a great urban choir of kids that were just sensational on the song One for All, which is all about 9/11. And so it was a real comfortable atmosphere. The nuts and bolts was done here in my home. I have a studio built downstairs. And then we took all the rest of it to New York for the mixing, which George Marino mastered it. He did Lennon and Hendrix and Kiss and early stuff of mine. He's just really brilliant guy. So it was all kind of very loosely done. I didn't tell anybody, you know, you got to play this and you got to play that. I know how that feels, and it's not a great feeling. I'm not going to tell Paul Schaefer how to play or will. And they kind of just do, and, you know, maybe now and then I'd suggest something. But everybody just had a great loose time about it, but yet knew the seriousness of it.
We're talking to the one and only Peter Criss, and your new CD is called One for All. And actually, you hit on something that I wanted to mention, which is you have a real strong... and even though I'm from the West Coast, you have a real strong New York sensibility. I mean, you always have. You know, even back to stuff like a song like "Hooligan" off "Love Gun," which is one of the great songs. Just has a real swing to it, and it's I hate to use a word like street because that sounds so cliche, but it is a real city feel to it. And is that a thing that you were consciously trying to bring? Did you feel like you wanted to feel like the New York sound was really being represented, or is that just who you are?
I think it's who I am. You know, I'm a kid from the streets. I was born in Brooklyn, poor neighborhood. Mom and dad and I had brother, three sisters, lived in four rooms, Coldwater Flat, tough neighborhood. But yet, you know, the music was there. My mother, rest her soul, who I wouldn't be doing all this if she wasn't so important in my life to keep pushing me to get me with the music, knowing that's the only key out of Brooklyn. And you know, I don't think it ever. You could take, as they say, the kid out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the kid. So, you know, I was a pretty tough guy when I was young, and I think a lot of that street stuff, when I started hanging out in Greenwich Village, when it was a cool time to be there, when, like, say, you know, the late 60s, and you had Hendrix and the Doors, and then the first time the British invasion, and it was, I can't, hopefully all that has rubbed off on me, and now and then it does come out of me. I think it's important being a guy from New York.
Talking to Peter Criss, do you feel like some of that, because New York has, there's so much, there's such a romance to that city where there's the Gershwin and the Cole Porter.
We get Broadway.
And absolutely, the Great White Way, and New York also has sort of that seamy underbelly. There's a lot of grit and a lot of grime, especially in an earlier era. Do you feel like the mix of those two things, maybe that there's some of that, New York has a lot of that sort of instability where things in that city always feel a little tumultuous. Do you feel like that was a mixed blessing to you, the fact that there was a little tumult always kind of going on in the city that maybe rubbed off on you where things were?
Yes, very good. Very cool. Yeah, New York is very potpourri, man. We've got, I'm Irish-Italian. There's German, Irish-Italian, Indian, black, green, blue, orange. It's like major, musical stuff, always even going around in the air. If you walk through New York, you'll hear all kinds of stuff going on. And I lived in L.A., by the way, for 13 years. So, great place, different kind of mentality, different type of stuff. Where I think a kid for me, where I grew up, again, in near the Great White Way, that grease paint must have rubbed off on me because I always saw it in a different artistic light. When I started the band with the guys, we wanted it more than just, guys up there in jeans and a T-shirt. I saw it much, much more. I wanted to be in the band that I wanted to be in. That's kind of how it worked out.
We're talking to the one and only Peter Criss. This, I know that the new record, One for All, you said it's very autobiographical, a lot of things, the moments in your life that you address, whether the high moments, low moments. What are some of the key moments in your life that you wanted to talk about on this record? What are some of the moments you felt like, hey, this has got to be in a song, this has got to be something I sing about?
Well, I wrote one of the songs is called Faces in the Crowd, and it was a great movie. My late dear friend Stan Penridge, who wrote Beth with me, loved the movie. And the title stuck in my head for some reason. Some songwriting, there is no rules. You can write a chorus. You can write the bridge first. You can write the lyrics first. You can write the title. You can write the ending before the beginning. That's the greatness of writing. And I had the title stuck in my head. And one night, the last maybe the 10 years of my life, I've never realized how so important, as you say, kids, and the people in my audience go from 1 to 100, and you're absolutely right. Their kids and their kids are there, and their kids are there. It's just amazing. And I, many nights, spent looking out from the curtain out to these people of their faces and the joy and the ups and downs, especially when I come out to sing Beth. Oh, my God, I would see girls just break down crying, and it just overwhelmed me. And this song, I had it when I wrote it, I found that after a show, a musician, you go back to your room, you're all by yourself. It's a very low period for me, and it's quiet, and there's no more hoopla and screaming, and everybody leaves you alone. And the song came to me then, and I felt that's exactly right. You're in the room, but I kind of wanted to transport myself in time back to the stadium, which I do. There was a lot of magic in the studio how we did that, but it goes back to the screaming and the auditorium and the loudness, and then it quiets down again, and the song is truly saying that the spotlight is far from on me. It's really on the fans, and they are really the stars. And that really came from the heart, and the words were really chosen very, very carefully, same as Memories is a whole tune, kind of through all the years I've been through with the fans of the roller coaster great ride we've been on. So a lot of sentiment stuff in here, man.
We're talking to Peter Criss. The new CD is called One for All. And after, obviously, Kiss, and then solo career, and then you did acting. You were on Oz, right? The HBO show, and you were on Oz.
Was that too cool? You know, I just got a book they put out, and I wanted to see, I had my name, and I was so in awe that I did that. That was one of the best times of my life. I went to acting school for a while, 2 years, actually, and I even got my equity card, which had a lot to do with some of the way I'm even singing on this album, like Sending the Clowns from Santa, and a few tunes, because I took, I never thought I would take voice lessons, but if you're going to go on Broadway and sing 7 nights a week, you better have that throat.
When you
know what you're doing with it. So I had a little more knowledge now about how to use my voice a little more. I guess you're never too old to learn.
When you were acting, is that a thing? Did you feel like you had something to prove, or was it just one more thing that you wanted to do? Is it something?
Oh, man, I am a cinema guy. I wanted to do that. I wanted to act forever. And I don't mean Kiss Meets the Phantom. I wanted to do some serious stuff, and I still do. I still get scripts sent to me. I find it was so cool to not be Peter Criss and to beat a bunch of guys up with a baseball bat and then spend the day in prison and then go home at night to bed. It was really, to me, the most sensational feeling, because you really jump out of your skin and you could be some other guy for a while. It was very, very cool.
We're talking to Peter Criss on One for All. The final cut, the closing cut, is actually, is it with Ace? Is it about Ace? A little bit of both?
A little bit of both. It's I got a few chords there, and I started embellishing it, and I started getting really spacey with it, and came to mind was Ace, because we were really on tour for a long time, and the plane we were on after a while did feel like a spaceship, and I do believe he's an alien. I don't believe he's really from this.
It's from Jendel.
Yeah, that's exactly right, my friend. And it kind of, I started writing lyrics as jokingly, but they started making sense to me, and I guess from A to Z, it all fell together. And next thing, I'm singing a tune about one of my bandmates who is perfectly good to sing about, because he is all those things and more. So,
you know, for a guy who is from Brooklyn, as you said, grew up in the Coldwater Flat and just went from nothing to everything. If I can ask this, what was the moment? What was the one moment, whether you were by yourself, in front of the fans, whatever, the moment when you first knew, you went, okay, this is it. I am on that roller coaster.
I've got that story down, Cole. And it'll be eventually in my book when I do finish it. I passed Madison Square Garden when I was a boy with my mom, and I said, hey, Ma, you know, I'm going to play that place someday, you know, like, right? And it came, now I've played it many times, and the first time I played it, I walked out on the stage to do Beth, and I looked over to the left of me, and my mom and dad were sitting in a box, and they were crying like kids, which almost made me break down. And I knew right then and there I made it. I knew that's what I wanted to do in this world, was to let my parents see me on top of the world, especially at Madison Square Garden. The
sure.
greatest champions in the world had been there. And to see them see me there was, I said to myself, okay, everything else is cream.
I can't top that. I can't. There's no way to follow that up. Peter Criss, the new CD is called One for All. Is there a website, URL, MySpace, anything?
Yes, please, petercriss.net. Please, you know, go on there. I'll let you know what I'm doing. I'm not selling you coffins or anything. I'm just selling you good news. I'm not selling you nothing bad. I'm selling you, you know, what this Christian kid's doing and what I'm up to.
Excellent.
I did finish, by the way, over the winter, 13 brand new rock and roll songs.
Excellent.
That I'll put out next year, a rock album. And I actually finally finished my swing album dedicated to Gene Krupa, and I have to mix that.
So that is so great.
I've been busy.
My friend, I got to tell you, from someone who loves music to someone who makes music and continues to, it's been an honor and a pleasure. The album is called One for All. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Peter Criss. Thank you, Peter.
Oh, you're a gentleman. God bless you. This is very nice. You were very cool. Thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much. Peter Criss. Scotty, if you want to wrap that up with him, that would be so great. Thank you so much. Peter Criss, ladies and gentlemen.
That was awesome. That's childhood dream come true.
Checking it off the list. Ah, that's so cool. I was so nervous going into that. The first couple questions.
I have never seen you nervous. You were nervous.
I
could tell you were kind of pacing and you looked a little like I could see that you were thinking about what you were going to say next before you said it.
About a third of the way in, I sort of I sort of relaxed. Yeah. That is so cool. All right. Fantastic. What a cool guy, man.
That's so neat.
How great is that?
I loved his little
that story about his parents. That story about his parents. Mm-hmm. Is that great? That Madison Square Garden thing?
Oh, yeah.
What a cool guy. He was badass, man.
No, I'm on his website right now.
Oh, and it's just, and I'm totally a sucker for New York stories. I am totally just a stuck, he's like the Brooklyn guy. And he's got the great, cool Brooklyn accent. He's got that kind of cool Goodfellas thing going on.
Well, he doesn't seem affected by it.
No, and he's just, and talk about a guy. I mean, you can say whatever you want about, the 2007 and all the things that Kiss went through. Everything that, that happened with that band up and down, For that guy to be that cool and that down to earth, I mean, do you realize? I don't have the figure in front of me, but I'm pretty sure it's 90. Yeah, here we go. Listen to this. Kiss has sold 80 million records in their career. They have earned 55 gold, platinum, and multi-platinum record. They are the largest selling group in the history of the world, I think, behind the Beatles. I think it is the Beatles, then Kiss. And I think in terms of performers, I think they are third after the Beatles and Garth Brooks. They've sold 80 million records.
Damn.
And that guy, for him just to be so, for him just to be so cool and just so straight up like that and everything. And so, anyway.
Have you ever
cool.
talked to anybody from Kiss before?
No, that's it. I mean, the closest I've ever come is, let's see. No, I never talked to Tommy Thayer even. The closest I've ever come is having those Kiss liners cut that we've been playing all week.
Well, people don't even know. They think that you're some kind of like superficial fan. They don't see you parading around in your Kiss t-shirts every day.
Oh, dude.
Or like they don't see right here.
That I've got Kiss dolls in the studio.
Oh, they're attached to the thing.
Yeah. You can't actually rattle against the microphone.
Our studio is lined with Kiss dolls.
Yeah, over against the window, we actually have all of the Kiss action figures over there. And I, so who knows? Who knows how he feels about that? So you heard that crack he made at the end about Gene selling the caskets.
Oh, that was what I was going to comment. That was hilarious.
Excellent.
So
all
are
right.
they friends still? Or?
I think there's some estrangement there. I think that's the diplomatic way probably to put that. But you know what? It at this point, and then I'll quit just kind of geeking out about it. Because we otherwise I'm just going to sit and geek all day and we'll get nothing done. We're already into the news hour. I just got to say this: Kiss to me is like Prince, Madonna, the Rolling Stones. Anybody. In fact, we made this observation about Madonna a while back. That, she's nothing to prove. I mean, Peter Criss, those guys, because they have nothing to prove to anybody. They were the biggest band on earth for a long time. They went away. They came back in that reunion tour in 96 and were the biggest band on earth again. And I got to tell you, for a guy, and that was the first time I'd ever seen them, for a guy who grew up listening to them, only heard the legends, the myths. I only heard the stories. It was like some sort of a tale of Sisyphus passed down throughout the years. And then to actually see them live, I will tell you, to this day, I mean 10 years, 11 years later, the opening moments at that Kiss reunion show that I saw in 96, that is transcendent. It is the greatest moment of my music life, probably. I mean, as far as seeing something live, certainly. I mean, because it's just impossible to overstate the level of, it just starts to sound so gay, but we were just, everybody in that stadium was just floating. I mean, there was just not, you didn't even feel like you were on Earth at that moment because it was a thing you had only ever heard about. And see, you're not that much younger than I am, but I think there's enough of an age gap there that you probably don't remember a world without Kiss being around. Walking around now on TV in whatever. There was a long time when Kiss was sort of around without makeup, but you didn't really feel like it was Kiss, and you only heard the stories about what their old makeup era concerts were like. And then to actually see it I mean, it was like in my head, it was like the only thing I can compare seeing that Kiss reunion concert to in 96, the only thing I can compare that to is when is when the new Star Wars film came out in 99.
Uh-huh.
Before you saw it, when you Phantom Menace, when you saw the trailer for the Phantom Menace, that's the only thing I can compare.
I still have yet to, I need to borrow that from you.
What?
Well, I was thinking the Phantom in the Park, whatever
that is. No, Kiss Meets the Phantom in the Park. Yeah, see that maybe after you've had a few.
Okay.
That's. I think there's a European cut of that on the Kiss DVD we're giving away. Let's get this one call quickly. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's
just
up?
Just wanted to let you know from an audience perspective here, a little Insta poll. Man,
yes,
everything
sir.
From chills to a lump in the throat. Great
Thank
interview.
You. He was a cool guy. He really yeah, was.
Absolutely. And I think you managed to really capture an entire span of you know everything from the personal to some of the fun geeky stuff.
Excellent.
So just a job well done, my friend.
Thank you.
Way to go, team.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. All right, there you go. That's Frank. Thank you.